Wonderful political correspondent, of course, from the hot seat there in Pōneke, Whanganui Atara, Claudette Hauiti. Welcome, Claudette.
Oh, me tukumahi ki a koe. Pai ki te kōrero i a koe, Matt, me te whānau e whakaroho mai nā, me tukumahi anō ki a koutou katoa. It's really hot down in Wellington, even though the weather is really cold and it's windy. It's hot because the Select Committee are meeting their ministers and they are drilling their ministers on the budgets that affect their portfolio. So I've been in Te Ara Whiti. Well, I've been in the Māori Development Select Committee, Māori Affairs Select Committee, listening to Te Ara Whiti Minister Tamapōtaka talk about the budget and the plan for Te Ara Whiti going forward, particularly since, you know, they have identified 2040 as a cut-off point for treaty settlements. So obviously that's under scrutiny. Yeah, so it's hot down here.
I'm glad you described it that way because I didn't realise Pōneke was hot as in physically hot.
But a lot of hot air.
A lot of bluster. Well, you know, that's Parliament for you. And, of course, you are the host of Paramata Pātai. Hey, let's just go back to this. I know we're meant to be talking about Matariki and the politics of Matariki, but actually we can't ignore the politics of Te Ao Māori as well. And I was on the show with Moana Maniapoto last night, and she said to me, how do you think New Zealanders see this current government? And I said, oh, with patience. And then I might have blurted out, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. But actually, there's a lot in this. Do you feel, as our correspondent down there in the big house, that politicians, well, the government at least, is seeing that the narrative around Māori or Te Ao Māori is actually doing more harm than good, do you think?
No, I don't think that they fully understand the gravity of the community mobilisation and with the hikoi. Now, they think that it's a few disaffected loudmouths, but they don't realise that if those communities actually mobilised in one spot, like on the Parliament of the steps of Parliament, if the numbers would be the same, if not bigger, than the seabed foreshore hikoi. So I think they underestimate that it's not just Te Ao Māori that is protesting the different policies and the repeals and the cuts, but it's also other disaffected groups like the environmental groups, disabilities, community, a whole range, and I think they've underestimated them. Now, interestingly, I did speak with one of the iwi, rangatira, on Parimata Pātai. She said that the coalition government, they know the coalition government isn't speaking to them, the likes of them who are opposing the fast-track bill, but they are speaking to a very core group of voters who are also very well-heeled and very big pocketed, long pockets. And we know that often, and particularly in the last election, we didn't go to the polls. A million people did not go to the polls. Those that did vote for this coalition government. And this coalition government are speaking to them. They're not speaking to those 1 million people. Only 33% of us Māori went to the poll. So, you know, 67% of us, they're not speaking to.
Well, so, see, and that's one of the, sorry to interrupt, but that's one of the big challenges, right? Because a lot of people, they didn't turn out to vote. We know this. That's what the data tells us. But it's kind of like, you know, you ran a list of people off that this government has managed to really anger. Māori included, obviously, but of course, even down to the shop retailers and the dairy owners and the Indian shop owners and retailers, who I somehow sometimes think that they all thought, even though they did turn out to vote, they're now realising they voted for the wrong crowd because all the promises have not necessarily, how do you put it, is metamorphosized even a word?
Yeah, so they voted for particular policies.
Yeah.
They voted for a fast track of the of the economy. They voted for cuts in cost of living. They didn't get that. So, you know, you highlighted retailers, as an example, here in Wellington with the public service cuts. Now, Nicola Willis said there's about 2,500. Other media are saying it's up and around, and even David Seymour says it'll be up at around 5,000 people. But those cuts to those public servants who are real people spending real money in those retailers' outlets. So if we don't have those people walking around the streets, then those coffee cafe owners don't get, you know, their business is affected. Retail shops are affected.
I was down in Wellington the other week for a meeting, and I got a taxi from the airport to the city, and just listening to even the taxi driver saying, you know, it's never been as quiet. I said, how's it going? And he said, it's never been as quiet as he's seen it since the 1980s, and he's been a cabbie for more than three decades. Business has dried up. Everything's dried up, he tells me. And then I get to the hotel, and rooms are now empty on a similar vein to when the pandemic was on, and legitimately people weren't in Wellington because of the borders being closed. And now it's everything. They just haven't. It seems as if they're oblivious to the implications of what they're doing.
On the domestic front, absolutely, which is why they're also focused on international trade and tourism, picking up tourism as well too, to bring in those people that have left those rooms vacant. But what happens if there's nobody to, you know, to service those people in those hotels and those coffee shops? There's not enough coffee shops. And as we know, with inner city Auckland, Te Kapu or Tamaki Makaurau, it's a dead spot anyway. I mean, you haven't got the number of people to be able to service those tourists that are meant to be coming to Tamaki Makaurau. And let's not go into, you know, the crime spots within Auckland Central as well. But also too, with those cuts, they are affecting regional provincial areas, and we didn't bank on that. Mm. Well, those that voted for this coalition government didn't expect that, as an example, Jobs for Nature would get completely wiped out. Now, that Jobs for Nature, as an example, we just had 2 months ago the Prime Minister's Science Awards, where two groups, one in Te Rapiti in Northland and in Whangarei, won the two top awards. They were groups that had driven up employment off the back of Jobs for Nature, whole communities being employed. It was part of Shane Jones's shovel-ready projects under the Provincial Growth Fund when he was in party with the previous Labor government. And now that's been all wiped out. So we didn't expect that. Or those that voted for the coalition government didn't expect those jobs to go either. So there's a range of areas that have now become critical sore points for the coalition government. And it's only been, 6 to 9 months, and already we've seen the Prime Minister's personal rating like plummet to the ground. Immediately after the budget, the Taxpayers Courier poll, that's what I'm talking about. Now, the Courier poll is National Party's internal polling company. And this is the second poll that they have presented, that shows a slight decline in support for National. They'll be very worried. They say they're not worried, but they are worried, especially if it comes from the Courier poll. They've got the opposition slightly on the rise. Labor dropped down 0.06%. I mean, that's bloody nothing. But Chris Hipkins, he's on the slight rise. And so it's very worrying times.
Well, see, just sticking on these job cuts for a moment. I mean, I was watching the Finance Minister, Nicola Willis, at Select Committee. I think it might have been yesterday. And she came up with that figure, I think you might have mentioned earlier, 3,700. And yet, the fact-checking by RNZ, who's running a tally on all the jobs as they get announced by the public service or public sector organisations, is up to 6,135. I mean, there's a big gap between 3,700 and 6,135. And, of course, the RNZ tally is based on statements from the ministries themselves and the PSA. Question being, I mean, how is the finance minister apparently getting these figures so wrong? Or is this just, again, playing with the numbers?
Oh, you know, as they say, you can make the numbers say whatever you want them to say, can't you? But having said that, though, it is true to say that some of those, whether it be 5,000, 400, 4,500, 5,000 or 6,500, in and amongst those are jobs that are already vacant. There is a number of those. They're not in the hundreds of thousands, you know, in the thousands of thousands, but there are hundreds of those. There are also, in, you know, I know of a friend of mine who was made redundant, and then they split her role into three. So they actually counted that one dismissal as three separate roles. So there's that kind of thing going on with these ministries. So one person retrenched, actually they've gone and stated that this individual was doing three or four roles. So that's how they've managed to get the numbers up. But we've got to remember that there are still real people with real families, with real rents and real mortgages, with real children wanting to be fed. So whether it's 4,600 or 5,500,
or 3,700, yeah, exactly.
It's still family that needs to be fed,
and that's part of the problem. I mean, you know, as we come up, and this is a nice segue now into Matariki and the politics of Matariki, of course, because you know one of the things I've noticed is a lot of politicians from the government side of politics, if you like, who are more than happy to be seen photographed at other groups' events, even dressed up in national costumes of other countries, even talking in languages of other countries, like David Seymour and the ACT Party, and speaking in Mandarin for I think it was for the Chinese New Year, and yet we're not hearing much in terms of Matariki from these people, and yet it is a uniquely indigenous holiday, a uniquely Aotearoa New Zealand holiday. I mean, is that, I mean, I hate to say it, but is that kind of like the litmus test of how well they are reading or not the general public mood at the moment?
No, this is the centre right and the far right, and their desire to not pay for any public holiday. Their argument is they don't pay for any other public holiday. Why should they pay for this? Yes, they understand that this is uniquely Aotearoa New Zealand, but they still think that it should be, or if there are any celebrations or commemorations, it should be paid by those groups who are running or offering that celebration. So it's the likes of local councils, it's the likes of different hapu, iwi, marae. Absolutely, we support you celebrating, commemorating. If you want to do it, go pay for it yourself. Now, that's sort of like the whakaaro of, you know, the ACT Party, as an example, who, you know, they're of that mindset. We shouldn't be surprised that the centre-right is like that.
So just with that Picardo, or keeping with it, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, are we talking about a philosophical approach or an ideological approach? Because, you know, one is worse than the other, in my view. I mean, ideology is always worse than philosophy.
Well, it's an ideological approach. And now, so the particularly National say that they're not into political ideologies. They're into politics with proof. But we do know that when you cut things like Māori housing, you're cutting things like domestic violence. You know, funding into Māori housing is also violence prevention. It is preventing children from slipping off the educational conveyor belt. They don't see that. They see everything in isolation and in small pockets. So when you look at the overall spend cuts, the budget cuts to Te Ao Māori, it was $300 million, not just the $90 million that came from Te Puni Kōkiri, but overall. So it was to drive up better public service to Te Ao Māori by the Ministry of Social Development, the Ministry for Justice. Now, better service there prevents flax roots issues. and they haven't taken that into account.
Now I'm going to ask you a very naughty question, mainly because I can. Is there anybody, do you think, in the coalition government who might be embarrassed by what's going on?
You know, sometimes I feel that the Minister for Māori, Tamaportaka, is
cringing sometimes?
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He's very uncomfortable with the policies of his party, and he's unable or he's unsure of how to encourage Māori to also drill down. His job, actually, is to drill down on all the policies. So while he says that there are advantages in these policies, he's actually got to show Māori where these advantages are. So Fast Track, as an example, even though that's not his portfolio, it is actually his job, and he keeps fobbing it off to Matua Shane Jones, but actually it is his job to convince Hapu and Iwi that there are parts of the Fast Track bill that they can advantage, like speeding up development of housing. It's not even the granny stuff. It's the stuff that Willie Te Aho and his whānau are doing in Te Tai Rāwhiti. It's got nothing to do with granny flats. It's actually got everything to do with unbundling that whenua Māori to allow those houses to get put there really quickly. So a lot of the pushback from our Māori organisations from putting whare down there is the RMA. Mm. So now our iwi can bypass our RMA and utilise their whenua. So although Cliff Bishop yesterday in his announcement with those granny flats and Winston said, oh, you know, it benefits Māori, well, yeah, it will, but actually the bigger issue is that there's other types of housing that can be advantaged. And so we're not getting that kind of, communication. There's really bad comms, no comms. But I can tell you from personal experience at National, has never been good at Māori comms or directly to Māori because they're not speaking to us. They, even under John Key's time, Bill English, they're not speaking to us. They're speaking to a different type of people, and they will go behind the scenes. They'll go behind the backs of their core voters and do what they know is right with Māori, because Māori are still telling them what to do. They are doing what Māori want them to do, except that this minister is not close to those flex roots Māori organisations.
No,
he can't pick the phone up like, you know, even dare I say it, Chris Finlayson, you can't pick the phone up and say, what do you want? Mm. When do you want it? And he doesn't have that kind of a relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting because just mentioning the Fast Track at the beginning of our kōrero, where you've got Shane Jones also running around the country saying New Zealand has to mine its way to the future. And you've got, I just cringe every time when I hear these one-liners come out, and I think to myself, hang on, a lot of the land that's being proposed to be potentially mined, the taxpayers are only going to get 3% potential royalties from it, and yet we're going to dig up a massive conservation estate. But then for a lot of iwi and hapu, of course, and Māori landowners, a lot of that conservation estate that they're wanting to dig up, well, used to be Māori land, Māori owned whenua.
Yeah, look, the classic example is Ngāti Rua Mahue up north in Te Tai Tukiro,
yeah.
Who've got lithium in Themba Hills and Whakarara and to Upoko. So, and they don't want that touch. But there are some conservational lands that border on that were once under the kaitiakitanga or ownership of hapu and iwi that were never allowed to be part of treaty settlement. Now, Kaitahu, as an example, even Tainui Waikato, have identified areas of interest that they can actually pick up now as part of the Fast Track. So when the Crown opens up these dock and conservational areas, they can now be picked up by these tribes and hapu that weren't able to pick them up previously. They now come under the first right of refusal if they can manage to keep that in place. So, yeah, for some iwi and hapū, they don't want those conservational areas opened up, like up north, Kei Te Paitera, but you've got some, even Maniapoto, you've got some iwi and tribes that want it opened up because they want them back.
Now, I'm going to be a bit naughty because I keep on coming back to Matariki, but here's a quote from Shane Jones. "We most certainly need those rare earth metals," he says, "in those areas called the Department of Conservation Dock Estate. If there is a mineral, if there is a mining opportunity and it's impeded by a blind frog, goodbye, Freddie." And, of course, he's on our show this morning on Pākehāwaha with Dale, and he says, another kaupapa, "If whānau and other providers can simplify the delivery of either factory-made or made-on-site 60-metre-square granny flats where one or two people can live in them and you can proceed without the inevitable bureaucratic interference, I think you will see providers as Papa Kainga garden variety Kiwis using this option." I guess my point is, with these one-liners, it belies the fact that, well, hang on, where's the transparency and everything that's going on as well? Is what we're now saying, we're comfortable with putting modulated flat pack houses from IKEA into a backyard for people to live? Are we creating, say, for example, like digging up the Dock Estate and killing native species or endangered flora and fauna? Are we now saying it's okay to create new styles of slums? And I guess it comes back to my point about, or my question to you about the way that Māori in particular, or the just general boaters, are seeing what's going on in themselves, like maybe Tamapōtaka cringing.
Well, you know, all very relevant questions, absolutely, and very relevant and, you know, concerns and challenges. And the government is going to have to work through those if they're going to work through them at all. Now, you picked up earlier about Shane Jones, and that was one of the issues around transparency and accountability of having only three ministers overseeing Fast Track. Now, that was everyone's concern. So while I say that there was some iwi hapū that they liked aspects of the Fast Track bill, but they also 100% everybody across the submissions concerned about the lack of transparency and the ability to be hijacked or corruption to come in if there were only three ministers involved here. There's also the ability for those international companies like Trans-Tasman to hover around and then take advantage of this. So in terms of housing infrastructure, we know that we don't have companies in New Zealand that will be able to fast-track infrastructure roading. And so we've got countries like China.
Yeah,
who
kind of like
China,
the other day,
hovering on the outskirts.
And just on that, before I forget, in China, of course, the other day with the visiting premier of China, you know, questions being asked about, well, okay, does that mean we're okay now with China investing in our infrastructure, similar to how they've been investing in infrastructure in other countries, and the evidence doesn't exactly say it's gone well? Are we comfortable with these new things? I sure as hell aren't.
Correct. And again, relevant questions that everybody has brought up. You know, everyone has mentioned that, but the coalition government is intent on doing business, continuing business as we have. They're our biggest trader, you know, and so it would make sense on that level, spying aside, that they would be somebody that we would look to in terms of infrastructure to come in ready available with resources to be able to drive up, you know, to fast track all our roading, our building, and, you know, safety compliance, that's one of the major questions that has been brought to the select committee. Those are the kinds of things that everybody is wanting to know. And then we've got the spying issue. Yeah, you know, it's kind of, while we've got our roads, what's in the roads? You know, do we have cables here? You know, satellites that are, you know, feeding communications? I mean, they're conspiracy theories, of course, but, you know, who knows? Well, I mean, this is the age of technology.
Huawei. I mean, you know, if we take the roads, are we taking the Huawei as well, given the fact that the US Congress has said no? And, you know, all this other sort of to me. Anyway, I feel like you and I need our own weekly roundup show.
Can I just say something about Mata Vicky?
Yes.
Am I coming to the end of my time now? Because I'd like to talk Mata.
I could listen to you till the cows come home. In fact, I'm looking at Huck thinking maybe we need a sound effect that goes something like moo. Hey, coming back to Matariki, what does Matariki mean to you, Claudia Tauiti?
Well, yes. Can I say that when my little girl, she's 16 now, and when she was very little, we used to go out and do our own little kaitahi and hokai to Matariki. We'd take our shoes off and, you know, we'd do it in the late afternoon when it wasn't cold, and we'd light a little fire and we'd make our moimoia, we'd write down our, you know, aims and aspirations and our dreams, and we'd put it in a little kunal that I'd make, and then we'd put it on the fire and then send it up to Hewa Tirangi into the sky, and then we would have something to eat.
Oh, it's beautiful.
But as she grew older, now, she doesn't want to go barefoot in the grass with her mummy. She'd rather run barefoot in the grass with other types of people, but not her mummy. But what I did want to say was, our kai was very simple. I just want to, you know, encourage our whānau to eat what's actually in the kaupapa and not to go out and make big, huge spends on kai like we do for Pākehā Christmas. And I know that there are some ads on TV at the moment that where our whānau are having really big, massive kai. Sometimes it's okay just to have the cornflakes or the biscuits or a cup of Milo or a cup of tea.
As long as you're together.
Yeah.
You know, can I just give you a bit of advice from a wandering spirit here? If you want to get payback on your kids' whānau, the best thing you can do is go and get yourself the worst car that looks like the worst car in all the schools, and drop your kid up at school in the morning and toot the horn. That's what my dad used to do to me.